Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Motivate My Life Radio. I'm your host, Teresa Murphy, and this morning we have with us guest Natasha Brown, brand strategist, founder of 10 Blessings Inspiration, author of 10 Blessings of Betrayal. And Natasha is going to talk with us a little bit about her movement, her initiatives, being an entrepreneur, and what keeps her motivated to be able to help other people achieve success. Good morning, Natasha. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. Thank you for joining us this morning. What we want to start with is kind of letting people know who you are and a little bit about, I know you have a few things going on, being an author, an entrepreneur, and also being the founder of 10 Blessings Inspiration. Can you tell us a little bit about who Natasha is as an individual?
Okay, sure. As an individual, at this point in my life, I really just consider myself a communicator for Christ. I'm a survivor of a lot, including, you know, domestic violence and some other things. I'm an entrepreneur. Of course, I'm a daughter, an aunt, a friend, a domestic violence advocate and counselor. And so I think all my many roles, you know, can make up who I am as an individual. But overall, I really just consider myself a communicator for Christ. I just want to live his will for my life.
Awesome. Now, Natasha, you went through domestic violence. And if you can let us know a little bit about your story as far as how you survived what you went through with your domestic violence.
Wow. Okay. So I don't know where I should begin, but, you know, domestic violence always starts off really small and, you know, you start to cover up things and deny it and say that it's going to get better or no, it was just a one-time thing or it'll never happen again. And so, of course, that was my story as well. And so that went on for a couple of years. And one summer, I remember the summer of 2012, which I call the summer of terror, it became really, really bad. And that was the summer where most of the domestic violence occurred and really just kind of displacing my life, you know, from me being homeless at that point and really losing everything, having a lot of broken bones and you know, scars that I had never been accustomed to. But at the same time, you know, trying to fight and be an entrepreneur and build a business. And so I was living a double life. And then, you know, that happened in 2012, and that's when I first became a victim of domestic violence. And so I thought it was, you know, all over, but you know how it goes. It's the cycle of abuse. You have this honeymoon stage. Well, my honeymoon stage ended up being a year, almost a year and a half. And then on January 2nd of 2014, I was with my my significant other, who's my ex now, of course, and someone actually tried to kill him. And I was there. Yeah, it gets crazy from here. I was there,
wow.
And me being the protective person that I am, I jumped out of my car and I tried to break it up. I jumped in it. It's the middle of a snowstorm, and I didn't really know what was going on. I just thought it was a fight. Well, come to find out, he had been stabbed 9 times. And I got him in the car. Well, he got in the car barely, and he was bleeding from everywhere when I turned on the light. And that's when I realized it was, you know, more serious than what I had initially thought. And so I rushed him to the hospital, and, you know, it was just, it was really crazy. So I'm explaining to the doctors, he's fighting for his life. Meanwhile, they're cutting off his clothes. The doctors and police are like, what's going on? I'm explaining, you know, what happened from my perspective and what I saw. Next thing you know, Teresa, maybe 20, 30 minutes later, I'm being handcuffed. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm being handcuffed. I was taken to the police precinct in which they told me that the people who actually did this, who stabbed him, said that I did it. And so they have framed me.
Wow.
Because I was basically out there all alone, you know, with him. And so it was like four or five people against one. And then me, you know? So they thought, of course, that he was going to die. And if he would have died, I might be in jail right now. And so after that crazy incident, I can keep going on and on, but the domestic violence started back after that, after he survived. And so finally, you know, after that incident and me trying to fight through that for the whole year, and really still try to be his friend and be there for him. God told me that it was life or death. It was either his life or my life. And so I had to finally, like, let it go and realize that, you know, that was the last warning sign that I would get, you know?
Well, you know, what I would like to ask, Natasha, too, is what was the first sign where you knew that you were in a, before that incident took place and you were in a relationship with this individual, what was the first sign that you actually saw that you knew you were in a domestic violence relationship? Now, was it that incident that kind of brought on that you knew you were in a domestic violence relationship, or did some things happen prior to that?
No, yeah. So in 2012, which was a year and a half before then, it was on 4th of July. You know, we were at a cookout, a family event on 4th of July. I fall asleep, wake up to him screaming and yelling at me. And I'm like, what is going on? We go outside to talk, and then he pushed me down the stairs. And and then he like pushed me, and I fell. And then some people had saw, and they went and told my brothers and some people in my family, but I immediately covered it up. And I was like, no, he didn't do that. And my brothers and them, they were like, yes, he did. Such and such said he did, that he did. And I'm trying to keep the peace. And I'm like, no. Well, what I did and what we do when we defend them and cover it up is give them permission to go a little bit further. And so from that incident, it just got a little bit worse until it finally just like blew up. And I ended up, you know, he ended up headbutting me at one point and my whole head gashed into my skull. Broken ribs. I've been, you know, arrested because of this guy before in hospitals, you know, under different names because I was too ashamed and embarrassed. Broken nose, everything you can think of. But it wasn't a situation where I wouldn't fight back. Of course, I would fight back, but I just wouldn't leave. You know what I mean? I don't know.
A lot of the listeners probably would like to know, too, because if people haven't been through domestic violence, and I say this to individuals all the time just because I am actually a domestic violence survivor myself, and if you haven't been through domestic violence, you know, people always ask that question, well, why did you stay or why didn't you leave? And you have to really actually walk in the shoes of a domestic violence survivor to understand when they're in that situation, why did they? Can you tell some of the listeners, too, like, what are some of the signs? Like prior to someone physically putting their hands on you, because there's so many things that when it comes to domestic violence, there are a lot of different abuse levels. You have financial abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse, verbal abuse, and of course the physical abuse. But a lot of times women, we kind of ignore a lot of the other abuse if it's not physical. So what kind of signs can you tell women right now that may be in a relationship and they may be headed down that road of domestic violence?
Mm-hmm. So 10 warning signs that you can definitely look for, which we posted recently on our Instagram page, but controlling, so abusers, they want control. Restricting your relationship. Sometimes it's jealousy and possessiveness. So maybe he's like, oh, you know, you might be thinking, oh, he just loves me or she just loves me. She wants to know everywhere I am, or he wants to know, make sure I'm good. But no, is it jealousy and is it possessiveness? Also, you know, there's always an unequal balance of power in some sense. Like with me, it was a little bit different, whereas I wasn't really like financially dependent on that person. You know, I was the primary breadwinner, but it was always this thing where he always wanted to be around me. Like it was like this clinginess almost thing. But now I see that that was just possessiveness. The person won't take no for an answer, explosive temper. And this was my situation where he had a terrible, terrible, terrible temper. And it was almost like, you know, you could almost see it coming, but it came out of nowhere. They always make promises that they never keep. It's like broken promises. Sometimes people get threatened or they're feared, you know what I mean? Like they have that fear. And then, of course, the physical harm where it escalates. And then after it escalates to either physical or very, very explosive emotional abuse, there's always going to be this period of, like, making up. Like, I'm sorry, baby, I'll never do it again. And they'll wine you and dine you and buy you gifts. I mean, it's almost like you're being bought off, in a sense. Whatever it is, that's your thing. Some people, the abuser knows that their partner loves material things. Some people, it's sex. Some people, it's, you know, whatever it is, whatever they know that your thing is, then you'll get that. You know what I mean?
So they kind of use that against you, of kind of reeling you back in to basically forget about the situation, which is going to, it's going to be only temporary because it will, of course, happen again. So for your listeners out there, and you know, I do want to touch on this really quickly because people always, I always get, you know, somewhat backlash where they say, well, women are not the only people that go through domestic violence. You know, men go through domestic violence as well, and they get abused as well, and I totally understand that. But the statistics are so high for women to go through domestic violence and be abused by men. So that's kind of why we touch so much on that topic. But when it comes to an abuser, a lot of times you have no control over that individual. And I think that's the thing with women, when we're in that relationship, we start to find fault in ourselves or we try to figure out, is it us? And from my understanding and my study, a lot of times abusers, they had issues way before you that had absolutely nothing to do with you. So when you're in that relationship, don't try to fix someone. I definitely would say that. And far as your situation is concerned, going through domestic violence, the number one question is, how did you leave? Because we all know when you abusers, they can be very threatening. You can go through a cycle of events and things of that nature. You can actually get hurt. I mean, some people are not even living right now to tell their story. So how did you leave and you actually create a safe haven for you after all of the abuse, after you got framed for an actual attempted murder that you had nothing to do with? Like, how did you create a safe haven for Natasha and leave that situation?
Well, one, I had, after, you know, the whole legal situation happened, that incident, and then the abuse started again, I left. I left where we lived together, and I went to a family member's house. But then even after that, we rekindled sort of friendship type thing. And we really worked together a lot after that, and no one knew, and for months. And then it got bad again. With my abuser, he has a cycle of whenever he's up, like whenever it's like, oh, he's making a lot of money and doing really, really well, that's when he gets very arrogant and gets abusive or controlling and just starts acting crazy. But when it's like he feels like he's not doing well or he's down and out, it's like I'm the best person in the world. And so it got to one of those things again, you know, one of those cycles where he was doing really well, and then he started treating me really bad again. But of course, I shouldn't have even been trying to be friends with him. And so I actually had a restraining order against him, even while we were still like kind of hanging out together. But then it got like he came to my house at one point, and this was like the last straw. He came to my house and we got in this big explosive fight. And, like, literally, like bad. And I was just distraught, and my face was all messed up. And then after that, he had came over a couple of times and kind of, like, followed me home and took my groceries out of my hands and threw them all over my complex. And then after that, God was just like, you know what? Leave him alone. Like, it's either life or death. And I literally made the decision that I would never answer another phone call. I would never call him. I would not have any contact with him. And so he harassed me for 2 months, 2 to 3 months, up until I released my book. And he harassed me, and I had another I went and took him to court again. And even after that, it was like he didn't care about the restraining order, and it still kept continuing. And it continued on the internet. And so it was everything from cyberbullying to in person to trying to control and manipulate things, even to the point of invading my hashtags. And so it got really, really crazy. But finally, as the Bible says, if you resist the devil, he will flee from you. And so I finally just ignored him for so long, I think, that it just got to a point where he was tired or bored because I wasn't responding anymore. And so literally I heard that, you know, life or death thing, and I was like, okay, God, I'm good. And after that, I just focused on the future, and I published my book, and I started to do different work, and I still kept ignoring him. And then, you know, I just got the strength every day by telling my story, I think.
And so, and we're going to move forward to your book, because from your life experience dealing with domestic violence and actually being a domestic violence survivor, that was the motivation behind your book. So tell us a little bit about what is 10 Blessings of Betrayal about. Give us a little synopsis.
So 10 Blessings of Betrayal, a spiritual journey of rebuilding through tragedy. It starts on that cold winter night when, you know, I found myself in the center of that attempted murder plot. And so from there, it talks about how I literally just lost everything, my sanity, you know, and it takes us down that downward spiral. And then from there, then the blessings, because what I learned after I went through that whole situation for 9 months, being really depressed and down and going through domestic violence and all that, I stopped asking, you know, why me? And instead I started asking God, what do you want me to learn from this? And then that's actually when he revealed 10 blessings to me. Like the next day I woke up and he was like, write. And so I started writing, and what I thought I was writing, I was very, very angry. It was the day after my legal situation had like solved itself, you know, how it, you know, it basically my case was dropped, but it was my court day. And I was still very angry and resentful. And I realized that nothing would get rid of my anger and resentment. And so that's when I prayed that prayer. And then I woke up the next day and he was like, write. So I started writing, and what came out was the 10 blessings of the betrayal. It wasn't, you know, a hate letter or anything. And so the book is very, very inspirational and uplifting, and it really is a collection of universal truths that we forget when we're going through tragedy, because it was things that I had forgotten. But it's almost like I feel like I didn't write this book. It was the Holy Spirit who wrote it, because I'm like, dang, like he was doing all these things while I was going through this. But I would have, like, I don't have the capacity to even know that much wisdom. So I'm like, I know it was God, you know, who wrote the book and did that so that I could be in this place where I am now to help others, you know?
And you know what? Sometimes we have to go through something, but unfortunately, when you're going through it, you don't know what's your message or what you're supposed to get from it. In other words, your test basically sometimes becomes your testimony. And when you're going through something, you have no clue. And we do get to that point when we question God about why me. And at this point, you're actually serving a greater purpose in life by being able to help other individuals. Now, you are the founder of 10 Blessings Inspiration, 10 Blessings 10K Survivors. Can you tell us a little bit about that initiative and kind of what does 10 Blessings do?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I love 10 Blessings now. So 10 Blessings Inspiration, the overall mission of the organization is just to empower people to thrive in their God-given purpose. And so 10K Survivors is an initiative and really our main outreach effort under 10 Blessings. So whenever we raise money, whenever we do, you know, outreach outside of the inspiration or books or classes, then it's all focus on domestic violence. So 10K Survivors has a mission and a goal, I should say, to empower 10,000, at least 10,000 victims
wow.
of domestic violence to become survivors. So there's a ton of us all over the country, and we really just work together to, you know, empower others, to empower other victims and help them get to that other side where they're surviving and even thriving after domestic violence.
So if there's some listeners on the call right now and they very well may need help, or they're going through a situation where they're trying to find a safe haven, is there a way they can reach out to 10 Blessings, 10K Survivors, to get in contact with someone to be able to actually seek help?
Yes, absolutely. On the website, 10blessings.org, if you click on the 10K Survivors page, you can submit any requests that you have there for us. So, you know, if you are a victim and you want support, and what that does, you know, people call me up or reach out to me on Facebook, and that's fine. But when people submit it through the website, we can then send it out to the best ambassador who kind of closely relates to that person's situation.
Mm.
And so what we really try to do is be that personal support, you know, when people are going through domestic violence, to be that personal support, like one, to pray with you, two, to be your friend. So we offer wraparound services. Two, to just be a friend there that's not going to judge you. We have helped with emergency relief and exit strategies. We do personal development groups and counseling. We have the Survivor Network, and then we do online domestic violence symposiums. And then most of the survivors have their own books and organizations and nonprofits. And so, like I said, when people reach out to us on the website, we can say, oh, this person would be a great match for XYZ ambassador. And then we might even send them someone's book, or, you know, kind of really just provide that personal touch to them.
Okay, and so, you know, we see a lot of stories on domestic violence that actually the tragedy where people actually lose their lives. What is the one, if you had to give one tip to individuals or to the listeners right now, if someone is going through domestic violence, Natasha, what would be the one thing that you would say to motivate someone to be able to get out of their situation? Because, again, like you and myself, we survive domestic violence, so we're here now. We can be advocates, and we can actually help other individuals. But someone right now that is in a domestic violence relationship, they're silent. They have not spoken up. They have not told anyone, and they're suffering basically in silence. What is the one thing that you would say right now to that individual to try to motivate them to leave?
Listen, there is so much beyond what you're going through right now, and God didn't create you to be abused. He didn't create you to be in that relationship. So he actually has an abundant future for you. So it's like we have to get to the point when we're in that situation, in those victim situations, where you're like, okay, am I going to forfeit my future for this relationship or for this person? Or am I going to go and get what God has for me, the future, the abundance, the love, the joy, the happiness? And so I tell people, just make the first step. The first step is in our mind of making the decision to leave. Because like me, I had made the decision, actually, I had checked out mentally far before I left physically. It just took that final push, like, okay, it's time for you to actually really go now. You have this. You can do it. You're not going to turn back. And so make the decision mentally that you're going to leave, and then from there you can put together your strategy, your safety plan to leave. But just know that is not where you belong. You can't change anybody, and we can't rehabilitate mm-hmm. our abusers
Definitely.
While we're in the relationship with them.
And you have to reach out for help, and that's one of the most difficult things for individuals that are going through domestic violence, that reaching out for help. And so that's why, you know, they are basically suffering in silence. I think that you have a great movement and initiative, and I think it's awesome that you put your time back into something. I mean, because this is a great movement, and it's needed. You know, individuals need it. And coming back to the domestic violence piece, just circling back to the very beginning, I know sometimes abuse can come from, you know, when you grow up, sometimes as a child. You may have seen it in your home. I know a lot of people that go through domestic violence. Either the abuser grew up and seeing abuse in his home, or either, you know, the individual that's suffering the abuse. For example, even myself, where my dad was pretty much the abuser in the home, and then I ended up actually dating someone identical to who he is. So I think it's really important for individuals too. And I tell people all the time, you live what you learn. And I'm a true believer of that. You live what you learn. So we have to be very careful what we pour into and the life that we create for our children as well. Because right now we have so many abusers out there that have young children. You have so many people that are staying in relationships because they have young children. People tell me all the time they can't leave, they don't have any money. So you have so many excuses to stay in these relationships, but there is help. Basically, you just have to reach out and get the help. And also, Natasha, you are also a brand strategist. Lots of great stuff going on. So tell us a little bit about your brand strategist and what do you do as far as helping individuals with their branding?
Sure. So I have a company, and it's so funny because this is actually one of the blessings that came out of everything I went through. Before, I had another agency that did branding, PR, and marketing. But now that sort of changed and evolved, and I have a business partner. So our company is called Brown and Duncan Brand, and together we offer brand strategy, content development. So I do a lot of ghostwriting and marketing, sort of copywriting, and then we also offer graphic design and web design. So I lead the content development side and really work with our authors, our clients, to help them, you know, write and publish their books and come up with content strategies and marketing strategies. And my business partner does the creative side, the design and website, et cetera. And then we come together on the strategy. So we both have a lot of experience with businesses and entrepreneurship and just strategizing. And so we work with our clients on the strategy and just figuring out how best to roll out their ideas, how to reach their target audiences, the messaging that, you know, will hit home with who they need to reach. And so that is what we do. And our website is bandbrand.com. So bandbrand.com.
Okay, and that was going to be my next question, actually. If someone needed your services, how would they be able to reach out to you? So you do ghostwriting as well. So those individuals who do want to write a book, but sometimes you just can't, you know what you want to write about, but sometimes you just can't translate that from, you know, in your brain to on paper. And so you do ghostwriting for individuals as well. And then you also brand businesses. So listeners, if you need any type of services as far as branding or ghostwriting, I know people reach out to me sometimes because I'm actually an author too. And they ask me, do I ghostwrite? And I say, no, I have a hard enough time writing my own stuff, my own content. So I think that is definitely a talent for someone to be able to, you know, ghostwrite for other individuals. And so, and then can you give us your website and your social media handles? And if you have multiple ones, that's okay as well. If you could just let us know what they are.
Yes, of course. And you know what? Real quick, I want to touch on the whole ghostwriting and strategy thing. I want people to understand. This is what I was doing, you know, before the domestic violence. I have degrees in writing and marketing. And then once I went through everything I went through, God really just made it me able to focus on really who my target was, which are people who are trying to turn their tragedies into strategies. And so that is really who I love, love, love to work with, like people with a story who want to turn it around. But you can reach me online at Natasha T. Brown. And so that is my website, natashatbrown.com, and it'll lead you to everything else, my Instagram, and then my Twitter account. I would love to connect with your listeners.
Now, Natasha, I want to ask you too, I know you do ghostwriting, but do you also do any type of advising on helping individuals as far as the publishing piece, or do you just kind of just ghostwrite the content and then that's pretty much it?
Yeah, no, we actually do advising on publishing. And, you know, I actually have mentors in this realm, and I've learned a lot from, you know, one of my mentors, which is CEO Azarel, and she has a publishing company called Life Changing Books. So I had to learn growing pains of my own publishing process, and then we met Azarel, and I've learned a lot more from her. So we were already sort of offering a lot of kind of assistance with self-publishing and the process, and just, you know, figuring out the best printing options for our clients, and, you know, getting the ISBNs and all that stuff. But now it's like I feel like I know a lot more than what I did when I first started, you know.
Okay, great. And then far as speaking engagement, like if someone wanted to, you know, book you for their event, to speak at their event, how would someone reach out to you for that? And do you go and do speaking engagements outside of domestic violence, or is most of your focus on speaking on domestic violence?
No, I do a lot of other speak engagements. So some of the topics that I speak on, of course, domestic violence. I speak on entrepreneurship and branding. I do a lot of social media talks, so teaching. I do a lot of workshops on how to use social media. I work with a lot of ministries who are trying to figure out how to get their churches online and, you know, just kind of making an impact. So I do a lot of business. And then when I work with youth, I talk to youth a lot about why they should kind of create a strong personal brand, even, you know, as a kid, you know, even as a young person, what that means to really represent yourself well and be about God. And, you know, so I have a lot of different topics that I touch on, everything from, you know, just ministry to branding and marketing and surviving, you know. And so, yeah, if someone's interested, they can definitely just reach me through my website, which is natashatbrown.com.
Okay, natashatbrown.com. And if you need to reach out to her, and that's basically for any of Natasha's services. Now, Natasha, I wanted to ask you, because at some point I'm sure you were working a 9-to-5 or you were out there in corporate America somewhere, private sector. I want to ask you, what motivated you to know that your purpose and your gift was bigger than working for someone else on a day-to-day basis?
Well, so I left my full-time job in 2010, and really what motivated me then was, I think I was about 27, 28, and at that point in my life, I had done so much marketing and writing and creative work for different companies, and I was seeing how powerful it was and how I was able to make an impact for these big company. So I'm like, if I could do this for them, then of course I could do it for organizations that I'm really, really passionate about. And if I had my own, you know, kind of creativity to kind of run wild with ideas and I didn't have restrictions. And so I was really motivated by that. And then at one point I got two big clients and I got them at the same time. And so I actually convinced myself in my head that, and I was doing PR at the time, and I convinced myself that I could not possibly do a great job for these two new clients and have this full-time job. And so at the time that I left, I kind of, in hindsight, I'm like, I should have stayed at my job a little bit longer. But at the time that I left my full-time job, I had never even made more than like $200 from being an entrepreneur, like, you know, all at one time. I literally jumped out on faith and said that I can do this. And from there, I didn't really look back. It just has been working for the last 6 years.
And, you know, sometimes, I mean, you have to do that. You have to believe in yourself to a point where you step out on faith. And the reason for me asking that question is because there are a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs, or there are a lot of entrepreneurs right now that are still working a full-time position, but they don't know when to leave. They don't have an exit strategy. They don't know at what point do I give this up. And I know it can be difficult trying to work a full-time job and also do your side business and grow your business, because that's what it becomes. If you're giving someone 40 hours a week at a job that you're reporting to daily, your business is your side business, because it's hard to build a business into an entity of success if you're going to work for someone else. So a lot of questions are always out there getting asked about how do I leave with no money? Now, I don't, you know, recommend people all the time to just leave. You have to believe in yourself enough to know that failure isn't an option. So on the entrepreneur side, when you step out there on faith, as you did, and obviously you didn't, it has worked for you. I think another thing is sometimes entrepreneurship isn't for everyone. I think that's safe to say as well, because you have to make a lot of sacrifices being an entrepreneur. So far as the finance piece is concerned, what advice would you give someone right now that they want to leave? They're 9-to-5 right now, Natasha, and they can't. They feel like they can't leave. We're not going to say they can't leave. I don't really like that word, can't. But they want to leave their 9-to-5 right now, but they feel like they can't leave because they don't have any money. That's their resource to take that, you know you're going to get a check, guaranteed get a check every week or every 2 weeks, and they can't leave because they have a resource that they're depending on, but they're absolutely miserable daily going into that job.
So this is something that I actually wish I would have done, but I would say for that person to, of course, I always say pray about it first, you know what I mean? Like really try to figure out where God wants you to be. And then just set yourself a timeline. So in the marketing world, like we work backwards. So we figure out the deadline, like when something needs to come out, and then build our timeline backwards from there. And so that's what I would suggest you to do. Like if your goal is for in a year to leave, like reasonably a year, what do you need to do leading up to that point? And so it's going to include things like, you know, starting to do your side hustle more, like starting to build your clientele, you know, as you're working. It's going to include stepping out on faith, starting to build your brand, you know, actually getting your infrastructure together so that you have things in place and you're not starting from scratch. You can hit the ground running. And we help a lot of people do that through B&D Brand. Like we'll really help them come up with their business ideas, their plans, and then actually build it. So building their identity and their messaging. So start to attract your target audience then. Start saving money, putting money away so that you can leave with that surplus. You know, you can have money in the bank and ready again, just comfortable by the time you do it. So I would say really set your date and then build backwards from there, really working on your business every single day. And if you are working 8 hours a day at your job, you know, you have to figure out a way to at least try to do 1/4, 1/2 of that outside of your job. You know, you have to invest in yourself, and that's time, money, and resources.
And that's definitely something as well that Natasha can help individuals with, far as that exit strategy, the marketing of the business that they want to grow, or even the marketing of the business that they want to get started. I think that is definitely needed and required because, you know, granted, we all sometimes, some of us step out on faith, but you do want to have a plan. I think it's really important. But sometimes, Natasha, I'll say this, sometimes, you know, it's kind of like you never have enough money to leave. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like as if you're what they say, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. So it's like you never have enough money to leave. And because some people literally do live paycheck to paycheck. And, I've talked to individuals, I mean, it's been 3 years now, and they're still talking about leaving their full-time position, but they can't leave, or they think they can't leave because, again, they are not making the money that they want to make. And sometimes, you know, you take that time and build up your client base is what I tell people, you know, so you can leave. But I think that's a part of people being stuck. What do you think?
I definitely agree. And the thing that we have to remember is never going to be perfect. Like you have to step out on faith. If you're doing something that you really, really feel like, if your business is really your passion and your purpose, at some point you have to know it's never going to be perfect. And I always say this, but you cannot wait until you see perfect before you go public. You have to plan and prepare, and then you just have to take that leap of faith and know that God got you. You know what I mean? Like, you have to do the work. It's seriously, because it's never going to be perfect. Like, with me, at times, it gets so hard sometimes. But I know that at the end of the day, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So I stay encouraged by that. But it's not always easy. No, you might have to sacrifice. You might not be able to keep buying shoes, and you might not be able to go out every weekend like you do Like, you have to sacrifice. Like, it's for me, Teresa, literally, I sacrifice every single day for what I want to do. You know, I can't do the things that I wanted to do. And when I was younger, when I first left my job, I actually was in another state. I actually owned a house in one state, but I was working in another state and, like, renting a house. And do you know, I gave it all up and I went and lived with my mother for a year. Like, you have to sacrifice sometimes for your dream. Like, I didn't just up and leave and was balling. No, I went and I stayed with my mom. And she helped me, and we built the business. And then I had enough, you know, to be out on my own.
Now, listeners, do you hear that? Because there is a message in what Natasha just said. You have to make sacrifices. And the reason why I chuckled a little bit on the shoes and even the shopping thing is because individuals want to build a business, but they don't want to sacrifice giving something up. And at the end of the day, you're going to have to give up something, because you can always go back at some point, you know, when you grow that business into a six-figure business, into becoming a millionaire or whatever your goal is for your business. You can always go back at that point, and you can buy all the shoes you want, all the handbags you want, and go to all the lavish dinners you want. You can do all of that. But there has to be a time frame for you to make sacrifices financially to be able to grow your business and not just leave your 9-to-5, because once you leave the 9-to-5, you still have to make even more sacrifices, because now it's almost like if you don't work, you don't eat. That's kind of how that piece works with growing a business. So listeners out there, you're going to have to give something up, because you can't have everything and grow a business at the same time, because some people, you know, if you inherited a business through family, you know, that's awesome. But if you're growing a business from the ground up, you're going to have to give something up. And we're creatures by habit. So, you know, we'll say, you know, I always get people say, well, I don't make enough money to save anything. And believe it or not, you know, you can save $20 and start creating a savings account. So when you go spend $40 and $50 on dinner, you know, hanging out with your friends, which is, you know, great if you can afford it. But when you go to the mall and you think because the shirt was on sale, you should pick it up. Because these are all things that we all have been guilty of. You can't have it all, so you have to determine what's of importance to you. So I appreciate that message, Natasha. And, again, before we wrap up to this morning, I want you, again, to tell us, the listeners, because it looks like we've had a lot more people that joined the call since we started. So if you can tell the listeners again your social media handles and how they can reach you.
Definitely. I'm at Natasha T. Brown on pretty much on all social media accounts. Facebook is Natasha 10 Blessings. But you can definitely reach me via my website, natashatbrown.com. And if you visit our you can definitely get my book, which is 10 Blessings of Betrayal, A Spiritual Journey of Rebuilding Through Tragedy.
Okay, awesome. Natasha, I want to truly thank you today. Hopefully you have inspired and motivated someone today on the call. I do appreciate you joining us this morning and taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you have a lot going on, and we definitely we'll link up again at some point. I would definitely like to have you back on the show at some point. I'm having an entrepreneurial day, which I'm going to just have different entrepreneurs on the show the entire day, and we'll talk a little bit more about you actually participating in that. I think you're doing some great things, and I thank you again. And you have an awesome weekend on purpose.
Thank you so much for having me, Teresa, and you do the same.
All right. Thank you, Natasha. Okay, guys, we're going to wrap the show up today. And, again, we want to thank Natasha for her message and for being able to spend a little bit of time with us today on Motivate My Life Radio. You guys out there that are listening, have a great weekend on purpose.